W-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
I am George Knapp, listening to That UFO Podcast and having one hell of a good time.
That UFO Podcast is powered by Zencastr. Zencastr is one of the world's leading platforms for recording and hosting podcasts. The open beta strives to put the power of studio quality remote video production into the hands of anyone with a story to tell. Features include HD video recording, studio quality sound, chat and footnotes. All running right from your browser, so you can record from anywhere without ever installing anything. Check out the links in the show description to find out more.
Except all of the characters are just variations of Reed Richards, just stretched out, and he's just pretending to be all of them.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. I am 100% leaving that small clip in there, and you can guess what Dan and I have just been talking about, and I can promise you won't be able to guess what it was. My name is Andy, and Dan, like I say, is joining me for this one. Dan, welcome back. Hi.
Hi, that's hilarious. Thank you.
Yeah, we have to leave that bit in. I just hit record right at the tail end of a conversation Dan and I were having. So thoughts on an email or DM to what we were discussing. And it wasn't UFO related, folks. So Dan, this is a follow-up review. We've done one already this month. It was this month, yeah, for A Terror in the Sky. And this one is on the new Aerial School Phenomenon documentary. Aerial Phenomenon. You can rent this now at www.aerialphenomenon.com. We will discuss some of the issues they've had around the renting, buying, or release of the film, probably after we've discussed the documentary, to be honest, because it's definitely worth a conversation. Thank you to everyone who gave us feedback on the A Terror in the Sky documentary review. We were very honest with it. We always will be with these. I think we're open and honest enough to say we tend to get these early. We're very lucky to do that, and we appreciate them being sent out, but that doesn't mean we're going to pander our pedal to people for interviews or, you know, free copies of stuff. We would happily spend our money on these things as well to discuss them with you on the podcast.
Creatives can do a lot with actual feedback as well, you know. It's almost the worst thing you can say is, oh, that's just great, and leave it at that. Like, if you give feedback, it can be improved for next time, you know.
If they want to take that on board, I get the feeling, and this wasn't aimed at UAPX, as we've had that discussion, just I suppose we can start off with a little bit on that, with UAPX done a roundtable on the A Terror in the Sky documentary. Gary Voorhees and others have come out since and said, obviously, they weren't entirely happy with how their part in that was portrayed and put across, probably ultimately disappointed with how it turned out. I don't think the folks that made A Terror in the Sky are necessarily looking for that feedback, and that's why I'm not doing follow-up interviews with those involved. That's not UAPX, I'm not talking about them. And that's just for me. I don't want to bring someone on just to sling mud at them. I don't see the point in that, but I don't feel they want that honest conversation either, because that's just the kind of content that Caroline Corey and co put out. They want a certain style and tone, and it's always going to be the same. However, I think that'll segue and lead nicely into the Aerial Phenomenon documentary. This is a very, very well-known and famous event to many. September 16th, 1994, in rural Zimbabwe, the Aerial School had a pretty incredible experience. So as we record this, you're looking at something that happened 28 years ago. The project was directed, produced, and written by Randall Nickerson. Randall will be joining me on the podcast on the 26th of May. So if you have any questions for him off the back of this, email to ufouapam@gmail.com, please, and I'll get those put to Randall. That'll probably come out the week after or so, Dan, won't it? Just given schedules and everything as well.
Yeah.
But I look forward to speaking to Randall. And it's released through the company String Theory Films. String Theory Films don't have a whole host of UFO documentaries and whatnot behind them. This is very much their first major foray into that and is no doubt their biggest project to date. Much of the documentary follows witness Emily Trim as she leaves Canada to head back to Zimbabwe for the first time since she and her family left Zimbabwe after the event. And it kind of picks up the story from the get-go. So initial thoughts, Dan, before you knew or before you saw this, what were your thoughts? What were you expecting? What were you hoping for?
I was expecting a really kind of somber but extensive and in-depth look at a case, you know, essentially a case study. Depending on what you've read, what you've watched, whether you've seen the original interviews, there's so much material on this case that we kind of needed a de facto new base to start from. And I was really hoping that this documentary would be that. And I'm pleased to say that I think it is.
Yeah, I think it's one of those that it's plugged into other documentaries, or you've seen it so many times as part of other TV shows, or if it's been on a Discovery Channel documentary or part of Ancient Aliens for 30 seconds or other documentaries like The Phenomenon and such, that you see
one of the more potent parts of that documentary of The Phenomenon as well. You know, everyone comes away from it,
absolutely,
anyway, talking about that segment with all the voices overlapping, talking about the event. You know,
I think I mentioned when I watched The Phenomenon, Susan came in, my wife, towards the end, and she saw the part where they talk about Ariel as it builds up and comes to the kind of climax of the film. And she's not that interested in this subject. I've said before, folks, given especially what I do, but that really caught her attention, given her background, and she worked in education and is used to dealing with kind of school children. That had a profound effect with her to see these kids discussing this incredible experience. So yeah, it was nice, like you say, to pull that out, all those clips and bits and pieces and stuff that's been lying on cutting room floors for so long, to put it all together in one concise package with some extra narrative weaved in throughout as well, but really focusing solely on the event.
Absolutely.
I would like to see the same done for the Phoenix Lights event. I think we're long overdue a well put together documentary on that.
I don't want to jump ahead.
Dan, the event itself, so like we said, September 16th, 1994, during the day, not nighttime, out in Zimbabwe, you know, not over New York or all that kind of stuff that we usually have with these events, or over Washington, a school out in the middle of Zimbabwe, on a recess or a break time or whatever you want to call it, wherever you're from, bunch of kids out playing notice that there's an object in the sky that then lands in a clearing not too far from them, and all kinds of reports of the object being silver, but then there's some variations around that we can discuss. We hear that there are two figures have come out of the object, large black eyes, big heads, plastic looking skin, bodysuits, witnessed by around 60 children. The headmaster claims probably more than that, but around 60 children discussed the event for around 10 to 15 minutes. Mid-90s, in the middle of Zimbabwe, these children, there's no CCTV, you know, there's no camera phones, there's no recording equipment. This is very much testimony only. The difference being, whenever we have something like this, it tends to be a much smaller number of people and usually adults. What we have here are swaths or swathes or whatever the word is of children all remoting. Gaggles of children. I don't even think that's a plural. An aerial of children, as we can say now, reporting a very, very similar event. And that's the fascinating thing behind this particular event, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a bit in the film where they're talking about the richness of the fact that all of the children have slight variations on the same story, which kind of shows that they experienced a similar event from different points of view, which is what you would expect. Someone argues that had it been a lie, they all would have kind of had exactly the same stories, and because they'd be following one point of view. It was very interesting to hear that, and then to consider it as you were hearing all of the children tell their stories and hearing the variations. There were a few things in this that people always want to know, is there something new? And you know what? There might not be, but for me at least, there were a few details in here that I hadn't read or watched over the years. So though it's not new to everybody, there's certainly something extra to be taken away from this.
Yeah, I think in any event that happens within a school setting, particularly if a group of children, if there's a fight in a dinner hall, you know, you could ask all the kids who witnessed the same thing what happened, and you're going to hear the same story, but with some differences here and there, and maybe this person threw a punch or this person threw a kick, and actually it was the other way around, but your memory just has a certain effect on you and you remember certain things a certain way. I'm sure, again, we've talked about this before, that if you ask a bride and groom sometime after a wedding about the wedding day, they're going to remember things slightly differently. Oh yeah, this person cut the cake, and actually this happened. I remember this person slipped on the dance floor. Actually, those details aren't quite correct. They're not lying. It's just the way their memory's chosen to kind of piece that together and project it back to them. And there's a real innocence, I think, is probably the word that comes up mainly with the children and how they describe what they've seen. They've clearly saw something. They're 100%, they're not lying. They've had an experience, and it's very, very genuine. I find this easier to watch. And I think we discussed this, Dan, when we talked about, was it The Observer's documentary, where the first half was Linda Moulton Howe, Richard Dolan and co.
That's right.
And then the second half went into a little bit of hybrid alien baby chat. And it's difficult to relate to and one adult sitting telling a story with nothing to back it up. And you think, I'll take that at face value. But for me, I just shelf that and move on. Whereas, like you say, you've got 60 children plus all sharing a similar experience out of the middle of nowhere. You know, they weren't brought up in a culture of UFOs and aliens, and that's not the case. It wasn't very westernized as such. And they talk about, you know, the same types of beings, the same type of craft, the fact the thing landed, and we'll get into kind of how that developed later on. The early investigations were done by Cynthia Hind. She was an investigator and local MUFON representative, assisted by Gunther Hofer. Those are some of the names that you'll see early on in the film. And they very much interviewed the children to discuss at the time, you know, what happened? What did you see? Take down the basics. The interviews are relatively simple as to what's done at the time. And they tend to have the children sometimes in groups as well, don't they? Asking them all. And not that it's not professional, but we see John Mack takes the investigation down the line to a different level with how he approaches it. What were your thoughts on...
He talks a lot about kind of feelings, doesn't he, of the children's experience, and a lot more tends to tumble out of them when he's talking about that, and that's where you get the kind of telepathic messages almost, or the feelings they got when the visitors were just looking into their eyes.
Yeah,
it's very interesting, and John argues that, like you said, whether something landed or whether it didn't, they experienced something, and that's worth studying no matter what, you know?
Yeah. Like you say, John Mack comes in and he gets them one-on-one, which is, I think, a big difference to how they were interviewed before. And like you say, he uses words like, you know, how are you feeling? You know, rather than just what did you see, which is what they were asking the kids beforehand. And that's no slight on Cynthia and Gunther and how they started those initial investigations. But he approaches it from that psychologist's point of view and is blown away, as are many people. I found it interesting, Dan, that when they talk to the teachers at the school at the time, I think it's Cynthia that's in speaking with them, half the teachers are quite dismissive of the event and basically say the children are lying. But some of the other teachers, quite rightly, come forward and say, no, I can't see how they can be lying. There was too many.
They were too panicked. Judy Bates's response, where she was a little skeptical, but then she said, I live here, I try not to think about it, I have a lot of sleepless nights thinking about it, and I'm scared of the unknown, so I block it off, so I'd rather get on with school. I believe the kids, but if I think about it too much, I'll lose sleep again. And I think that kind of fear of the unknown keeps a lot of people from talking about it. That's kind of the stigma that we're trying to get past, right? That this isn't something to be scared of, this is something we can study and understand.
Yeah, that first 20 minutes, Dan, you hit the nail on the head with people asking and asking us as well, is there new stuff in this documentary? Bear in mind, it happened in 94. How much new stuff is going to come out of it? What you do get is a focus on people like Emily Trim mainly, but other adults as well, including the teachers as they've grown older, and how it's affected them through their lives, and the story of Emily trying to come to terms with it, how it has affected her, her family, her relationship with her family and other people. And that's really, really interesting. That's that human element to the story we've talked about several times, which is really well done. And that's where the focus is. The first 20 minutes is spent recapping the story, the interviews, the children involved. Then John Mack gets involved. We see it interspliced with the past and then the present. We see many of the children, now adults, discussing how they didn't really know about UFOs at the time, how it's affected their jobs, how it's affected what their career paths ended up being, and their lives in general. Emily Trim, who we, like I say, is probably the main character or main focus of the full documentary, tells you how her family was very religious and they were discouraged as children from talking about the event. Her and her older brother both witnessed the event, but she says it's not that the family didn't believe her, but there was no space in their religious belief for this sort of event having happened. There was no way alien visitors came down and that sort of craft, and what happened couldn't have happened. But something did happen, but they basically chose to leave the country, didn't they? Off the back of that.
There was another family as well. A child named Paul is mentioned that he was deeply affected and they moved to Canada. The parents were just refused to discuss it. And yeah, we hear about people on the inside of the Pentagon who are very religiously minded, and they struggle with this because where we see UFOs and a mystery, they see something that can only be explained by things such as tricksters or demons and things like that, and so there's a reluctance to engage with it, which I understand, but you're never gonna make the unknown known by being that way.
Not all top secret tech is secret forever. That's why the kings of crotch comfort, Manscaped, have spent 2 years designing the most comfortable boxer briefs out there. I've had the honour of testing out these new boxers and I can say it's the softest fabric of any underwear I own. They've even trademarked the new jewel pouch, so you know it's serious. I think it's time you invest in your own special sensors, so let your tic-tacs breathe and get 20% off and free shipping by using code ANDYUFO at manscaped.com. The Micromodal fabric is buttery soft and breathable, absolutely recommended for anyone being grilled in front of Congress. While your forehead might be sweating, your little ufologist doesn't have to. You can also choose from an arrangement of designs and colours. Sizes range from small to 3XL. All shapes and sizes covered, both redacted and unredacted. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code ANDYUFO at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code ANDYUFO at manscaped.com. You can support the pod today and get a little something back at manscaped.com. One of the parents, the quote she uses is that she doesn't believe because she didn't see it herself, but she believes her child to an extent. And again, there's that block, isn't there, of, yeah, something happened, but they're clearly struggling to come to terms with, did they see beings that weren't human in a technology that they couldn't understand? And they've just chosen to go, do you know what? Yeah, my kid saw something. They're not lying. All these children saw something, but I didn't see it, so it wasn't aliens. And again, it's one of those ones, you know, Dan, we can be quite fair that I think we're quite happy to say we're not saying it's aliens, but on this occasion, it very much was described as being aliens. It was the typical grey type beings. This is what these children are claiming to have saw, and they all saw the same kind of object and same sort of beings as described. Tim Leach is someone who is featured quite heavily on the documentary. He worked with the BBC as a cameraman, producer and journalist at the time out in Zimbabwe, and he felt his career was ruined ultimately by his reporting of this being so frank and honest, and believing that yes, these children did see what they say. And I think this is, again, still to this day why perhaps many don't touch the subject.
Yeah, he was known for reporting from war zones, and he gave the BBC excellent coverage. And he explains in the documentary that at one point he couldn't get any information, and he found it frustrating because he was like, we're with the BBC, we're not just some random small news network, you know, we are respectable. and he was trying to get help to kind of decipher what was going on in the case and record everything. He explicitly says that he feels like covering the case got him accused of, you know, losing his marbles, and it ended his career with the BBC. So you can see why any other reporters that might want to report on it would be reluctant to go down that road. And it didn't involve Men in Black coming to his door and telling him to be quiet. It just involved the stigma and us telling each other, you know, not to talk about these things, which is changing now.
I think I'm right in saying Tim Leach passed away about 10 years ago. I think it was 2011. I believe if it's the same Tim Leach who ended his career as a foreign affairs correspondent, and he'd done a lot of work out in Zimbabwe, then a lot of Tim Leach's pieces within this documentary do appear to be older interviews, just with the quality of the footage. But he's a fascinating part of this. He left Dr. John Mack the voicemail, which gets John Mack involved in this case. Tim himself goes on to say he felt John Mack's involvement added a greater depth of credibility to the investigation, which it certainly does. We mentioned John Mack's part in this is to come in, speak to the children one at a time, ask them what they saw. But like you say, he approaches it from that psychologist point of view. What were you feeling at the time? What were your emotions? You know, and that's where, very interestingly, some of the children describe a noise in the air that scared them. There was a
bees, wasn't it?
Well, there was a flute type noise.
Yeah, that's right.
One of them says, said he ran away and told the teacher about it, who said, just forget about it, which is a very adult, yeah, just forget about it.
It is, isn't it?
What an odd response, but it's when you don't understand, you don't know what to do. Just, yeah, forget about it. It'll go away. John Mack speaks to the teachers, saying they should let the children share their experience. It's not to be dismissed. And this is the part I mentioned earlier, where several of the teachers say they're making it up and others aren't so sure. I had the same comment as you, Dan, from Judy Bates, who was a deputy head at the time. Seeing is believing, but I'm also scared of the unknown, so I block it off. And that just adds to what you say, that, yeah, that's how many approach this subject, especially as they lose that kind of childhood innocence. I think of the Polar Express, you know, how as a child you can hear the bell, but then as you get older, the bell stops ringing for you and the kind of magic goes away. And that seems to be, there's that point in your life, those couple of formative years, kind of puberty, adolescence, as you go into it, where you lose that kind of magic and that kind of sense of wonderment, and you move into that more logical way of thinking and viewing the world, which is a shame. But some of us don't and end up starting podcasts.
Well, it makes me wonder if, because we've spoken to some guests about whether only certain people can perceive things. Gary touched on it when you spoke to him. And, you know, it doesn't make you special if you can perceive them. It just means that you can, that's all. And I know that there are a lot of filters that develop in children as they grow up. And part of me wonders if children are a little more open to this kind of high strangeness than a lot of us adults are.
Emily Trim, in the middle of the documentary, visits the school, the setting. It's the first time she's been back there. It's very emotional for her. She visits Mrs. Hoacha, who is a former teacher, now very elderly, of course, reflecting on who were they, where were they from, you know, were they people, discussing the beings and the entities. And it seems that as she's got older, she's reverted back to being a bit more understanding. And, you know, these children did see something. It's no doubt something that stuck with her whole life. And people in the area have talked about it. And that comes across as you see people who live still within the local area as well, that it's something they're very aware of happening. And again, much more open to those types of experiences. And they talk about how they discuss those potential beings and where they may be from and why they're having those experiences in the area. And that's kind of woven again throughout the middle of the documentary, isn't it?
Yeah, they go to, at one point, an elder, and Emily speaks to the elder, and he talks about the experience from a spiritual point of view. And I thought that was really interesting, because there are a lot of traditions, like if you look up the origin stories of the Hopi tribe and things like that, a lot of it plugs into kind of what we know today as spiritualism. And it makes me wonder if there's kind of this little Venn diagram of overlap between, you know, these kind of worlds that we know and think are separate, but actually, you know, they might be layered onto each other, and we might be living in that layered part.
Everything everywhere all at once. several of the children talk about, and this is a part I was really looking forward to speaking to you about. They talk about an intense stare. There's an attraction that they had to keep looking at these beings. The beings were making them scared, terrified. This is some of the words that John Mack got out of them. Got the feeling that they wanted the children to go with them, which is quite sinister. Just from our point of view, it might not have been from the other way around. One says she thought the beings may attack them, and there was a feeling of evil. And again, this is something I bring up, especially when I'm... Thanks, I have that effect. Just when people online talk about, you know, all the stuff to do with threat narratives and all that kind of stuff is wrong, because these beings are benevolent and peaceful and it's love and light, and it's there's too many examples that like this, and with abduction experiences and anything else, where people don't feel happy and a sense of calm and a sense of complete, you know, relief and joy. And these children themselves talk about feeling scared and anxious. None of them tell you they felt happy or that they wanted to go. It was quite an unsettling and scary experience. So again, if you fall on that side of the everything's great with these potential non-human intelligences, you know, the Dr. Stephen Greer school of thinking, I think it's very pigeonholed, and you have to open up to, well, what about these experiences? Because these children certainly didn't feel welcomed or warm or happy about what was happening, and it wasn't something they particularly wanted to happen. And look how it's stayed with them their whole lives afterwards as well.
That's the thing from the film that stands out with me, that to use an analogy, you know, it's almost like forcing the blue pill on Neo in the Matrix instead of letting it be his choice. These experiences they traumatize people. Mm-hmm. And these experiences don't ask for this. And the least we can do is, you know, listen to the stories and take them seriously, because they have a huge, profound impact on these people's lives and the lives of people connected to them. It surprised me with some of the other kind of landing stories that people just don't talk to their current spouses about them. It's almost like they try and leave it behind in another life. And then you have people like Emily who can't help but paint the chip and the beans that she saw, mm-hmm. you know, over and over and over again. There was a great moment where she saw her drawing for the first time in years from when she was a child, and realized that it was pretty much exactly the same thing as she'd been painting all these years later. And that was amazing to, you know, that it sat that deeply within her that she couldn't help but express it.
The village chief's son, Duke Masonza, tells Emily in a conversation that she doesn't need to keep this to herself, and she should share it and shout it if she needs to. And he says that children are often used to deliver these types of messages as, and I love this quote, the message grows with them. So while the experience and what happened at the time may have not been a necessarily positive one, anyone who has any sort of sighting or experience will attest to this. And I hate to use myself as an example, but if I didn't see what I saw in the mid-90s, you know, the big object on its side spinning, you know, the podcast logo, Dan, as you asked me about it, and that's what you came up with, I probably don't have the interest in a subject I have now, and I don't start a podcast on it. So you can look at the same with Emily, where, yeah, maybe nothing so much happened in terms of her getting the message out for 24, 25, or 28 years, I think it was, but you look to where now that she's been in the documentary that she attended, as you find out right at the end, at Open Minds conference at the time, having that discussion, and she's becoming more susceptible to discussing the experience and getting that message out there. And there you go. And if that happens to so many different people, whether they're writing about it, drawing about it, doing podcasts, blogs, vlogs, magazines, if they are journalists who go on to write articles about it, or just people who have experiences in the military or the government who then come out, that's everyone doing their little bit that's had an experience. But I also appreciate how some people don't have that innate want to share, or they can't. And that's absolutely fair as well. So I thought that was a really interesting quote.
If you were influencing a population to kind of come to terms with the fact that, you know, you were coming from outside their planet or dimension or whatever, I wonder how many people you'd have to influence, and over how long amount of time you'd have to do that before you would create that kind of paradigm shift. Because like you say, not everyone is going to decide to share that story. They're going to keep it to themselves. And I've said before that I think a lot more people have had experiences than we think. So I'd be curious to know. I guess that might be something I get to ask them if I meet them, like, hey, can I see the algorithm for your change influence?
And again, I suppose that kind of falls in line with people thinking, well, why don't they just do this? But we can say it's been 75 years of experiences and events, and I know it goes back further than that. But if these some of these beings do experience time, for example, in a completely different way to us, then maybe they're looking at it at this point we're in now and going, well, you've got all these religious experiences which depict all these events. You then have any number of events that happened throughout history, you know, burning shields in the skies when it was the Romans, all that kind of stuff, to the point where the nuclear age comes into view and we start seeing more objects, we start recording more objects, and to this point we now have the medium of, you know, like entertainment and infotainment and documentaries. You've got this whole different range of media and mediums talking about this subject, and yet we're still told, yeah, there's no evidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, the pile is so big that just in the hearings that have gone, one of the senators was getting annoyed that a certain, you know, case wasn't studied because all the documents are out there. We're to the point now where this the piles of data are kind of undeniable, and it's time to start sifting through them and taking it seriously.
I would just recommend in advance sifting through any videos and getting screenshots that you want before you start playing them on live congressional hearings to make sure you can get the point of the video that you need. So,
someone did say, though, and I thought this was a good point, that that video was played as an example of how fleeting these encounters can be. And yeah, you know, in terms of that as an example, it sucked. It was really hard to see anything. Good job, but bring a better video next time.
Yeah, keep that for the classified section when you want to talk about the fleeting encounters. Yeah. So the children discuss receiving messages about or information about pollution and bad technological advancements impacting humanity. This is some of the best testimony for me available. And if you want to talk about testimony of like David Fravor and others, I think you've got to put these kids' testimony right up beside that, because they might not have seen Tic Tacs, you know, off their wing or been engaged in combat, but they were children who had no idea of what they could potentially be looking at and told you exactly what it was and what they saw. And there was very little outside influence on that. You know, they weren't watching Independence Day or the Star Trek series and that kind of stuff. They were just innocent kids, very young, and en masse had a pretty incredible event happen to them. So for me, that's right up there with the best testimony we have.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I'm glad you brought up Dave Fravor, because that encounter had some similarities with some of the testimony from this area of the film, where it was said that one being started running across a field, and that the way that the being moved was kind of a low gravity situation, but not as extreme as humans on the moon. But what would happen is, as the being kind of reached the other edge of the field, it would almost reset back to where it began and make the exact same movement again. And the child that recounts this says that this is where she got scared, because she didn't understand what was happening. Some others explained that the ship was kind of hard to see, because every time they looked at it, it would kind of be flitting off in another area. Mm-hmm. And when she was recounting this, I just thought to myself, wow, that's a very tic-tac-like movement, isn't it? I wonder if, you know, if we're talking something dimensional or something from another time stream, or, you know, wherever you want to go there, if the movement isn't necessarily, you know, as fast as we think it is, we're just looking through a kaleidoscope and that's all we see.
And that's not to say, you know, this object was a tic-tac, but what it's a good example of is it's the best close-up example of the technology that we're potentially experiencing. Yeah. And this is what these different craft. And I asked Lou Elizondo about that have we seen... How do we know these objects are all potentially from the same place or the same technologies, etc.? And he said himself that they appear to all use the same types of propulsion or whatever that may be. So regardless if they're coming from different places, they seem to have some sort of common technology. And that's what we're experiencing with these different events.
There was that awesome detail as well where it was recounted that it looked like the craft looked like a big rock, like water was trickling over it and the sun was reflecting in that water. It didn't look smooth metallic, it looked natural, which we've heard in other areas, but it's described as kind of the surface was moving like a lava or something like that. And again, it makes me wonder if we're seeing kind of through a lens, you know, whether it's kind of perturbing and peeking into this universe as opposed to present here. Very interesting.
I want to ask Dan, as we get towards the sort of end, and we're not going to talk about the whole thing because we don't want to spoil it for everyone as well. Is Avi Loeb the successor to John Mack? as I watched this, I realized, and they tell the story of John Mack throughout it as well, that John Mack took this subject to the mainstream against the kind of zeitgeist or what people would hope to hear in his academia, and essentially risked his professional career, which we hear a lot of derision even in this documentary about John Mack's decision, but ultimately how it was justified. Do you see a lot of similarities between Loeb and Mack?
Yeah, absolutely. And Loeb's also being kind of lambasted by his colleagues in the same way, yet he has the support of the higher-ups, just like John Mack did. There was a bit of a hoo-ha around whether John was asking leading questions and things like that, but the dean of the medical school basically ended up apologizing, and he says in the documentary that any academic has the right to be wrong. It's the right of the other academics to prove John wrong. So I think that's a great attitude to have. And so far, no one has proved John wrong. I love that we have his involvement there. And yeah, I would agree. I think Avi Loeb is kind of that current serious academic that is actually approaching the subject with an open mind and a scientific rigor.
Paul McHugh is a professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University, and he says they were embarrassed by John Mack and his quote-unquote enthusiasm. He says Mack had gone too far and that Harvard didn't like their name being associated with aliens. And again, that reminded me of Avi Loeb in the Zoom call, where he was attacked and called out by colleagues for even entertaining the subject of UFOs, aliens, yeah. and other things.
People don't have that same kind of fire in them when they're discussing angels with a vicar, you know, something like that. It's just as much a belief as anything. And I know some people would take issue with me saying that, so I'll just say you're entitled to whatever you believe. But also, that comes with a requirement to let other people have their beliefs. And I think John Mack, Avi Loeb, everyone has a right to do that. And that guy who said that he was embarrassed all these years later watching that clip, I was embarrassed for him. So touche, sir.
About an hour in, I started to realize one of the plus points I was enjoying of this documentary was the lack of talking head UFO celebrities being spliced in.
No Shatner.
The focus was on the story, the experience, and the impact.
Yes.
I didn't see the director putting himself on the screen constantly, giving us, you know, wow, I can't believe this happened. This was such an incredible event. Let's hear more. There was no need. Just show us the story, show us the clips, and give us a nice narrative throughout that we can follow. And you can follow Emily. She's used as not a plot device, but she follows and continues the story on, and it keeps going back and forward. And again, that was an issue I've had with other documentaries, not just A Tear in the Sky, but we don't need Michio Kaku to give us, as intelligent and wonderful as the guy is, random spurious sound bites. William Shatner to give us random spurious sound bites. It's that ancient aliens approach to things that just doesn't do it for me. I know many people enjoy it. I know many people don't. So that's absolutely fine. But for me, it really added to this documentary. And maybe that lack of polishing that you would maybe get with the green screen backgrounds and, you know, the names coming up with a really cool effect at the bottom and opening up across the screen with a little, you know, sound effect. There was none of that, but you don't need it.
Less is always more.
My exact quote, Nick Stan, is there was a late appearance by Danny Sheehan. Now you're almost, I think, an hour into the documentary and he pops up on screen and I've got less is more. Because he makes a very quick statement, he goes away and then comes back and again makes another couple of quick statements and is gone again. That's great. He's added to the documentary, but the documentary's not about him. He's very much just there. And if he wasn't there, would it have made a big difference? Not particularly. But there is a far greater impact seeing a couple of seconds of Danny Sheehan here and there. And he's not even advertised as being, you know, Danny Sheehan's in this documentary. But it's really nice to see him and hear from him, and he's used so, so well, far better than we've seen in a lot of other documentaries as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if a senator is going to bring up this documentary and anything associated with it in another hearing in the future. This is a very compelling case. It has the attention of a lot of the right people, and I think some sensors probably existed in 1994 that can corroborate this in some way. Hopefully, anyway.
Well, Dan, I've got down here as a point to discuss with you. Did these events happen then? for us to talk about them now?
I mean, I can see what you're getting at. We talk timey-wimey things all the time. And again, something outside of our linear experience of time could certainly jump back through and go, okay, if we just pour a little stone in the river here and here and here, then we're given the material to start chewing through publicly. It's a very good question. Is the phenomena itself influencing disclosure? And I think you can't ignore that possibility. You know, when a neighbor comes over, they have to knock your front door. If they break in through the window, you're going to notice they're there in a different way. So I feel like maybe it's an out in itself, but I also think of when you spoke to Gary and he said about DNA unfolding and certain instructions being in the subsets. And I wonder if maybe if evolution has gotten to a place where it's starting to unfold and let some of us see a bit more of the universe we live in.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
It reminded me a little bit of, again, mild spoilers, but I started watching Everything Everywhere All at Once, and they've got a little pad within it that shows you the multiverse, but it also shows you the timeline of someone's life, and it's like, left home, got a job, left job, met boyfriend, and it's like where things split off at different times, and they can kind of reverse and go back along and see the different choices and why they're made, when they're made, and how that affects the outcome of things, and is there a chance, like you say, that these things happened at that point so that someone like Emily talks about it 28 years later, or like several of those children, maybe more still to come forward? Maybe some of them are now like politicians or within government or working in corporate roles where they've not quite done it yet, but they're still to come forward. Or like you say, is this something that as the time now we start to get more congressional hearings, comes up as part of those discussions as well, not just in the US, but obviously we're a month away from Brazil's open congressional hearing, so that's again something that could be brought up, or similar events.
We're almost seeing like a number of spinning plates in different places starting to converge. You know, like you say, the hearings in Brazil, we've had the hearings in the US, we know some other countries around the world have always been a little more open. You know, you can get some pretty startling UFO files from Spain about planes kind of engage in UFOs and things like that. Canada as well in the past week has spoken up a bit, and I think you're going to start seeing this big international conversation about things like this, and absolutely all events like this contribute to the momentum and the awareness that it's going to take to have these hearings and to tackle this properly.
The final part of the documentary very much shows Emily's journey, both physically and emotionally, I think, coming full circle. She leaves Zimbabwe, she heads home, and she seems to have far more acceptance now of what's happened to her. Maybe not the why it happened to her, but things like her family now beginning to discuss with her a bit more. Her mother asks her about it. Her father, she says, brings it up at the dinner table. Maybe that's the extent of the conversation there and then, but for her, that's huge, huge progress. And she then appears, like I mentioned, at the Open Minds Conference to speak about her experience too. The documentary then kind of finishes up, you know, no airs and graces. We don't need huge title screens. That's the story. It's been presented. Here's as much as we have. 100%, there is nothing revelatory or startling. No one's breaking out here promising you new footage or here's some pictures that you never saw at the time, but what you get is the complete full picture of an incredible event and the impact it's had through the decades on those who experienced it afterwards as well, and also how some of those adults at the time, the teachers or parents, are starting to come to grips in terms with it more and having that conversation sort of later on.
Imagine being one of them and seeing this, you know, like Gimbal or Tic Tac or any of these subjects coming up. It must like feel like a huge weight lifting off their shoulders. You know, it doesn't necessarily confirm that it was the same thing, but certainly hearing these officials having the similar strange experiences must just be, you know, I know for me at least, but when I saw a lot of the testimonies and things like that, it was quite emotional to listen to come to terms with the fact that so many people are going to see this and they're starting to understand. and for a long time, people struggle with this stuff on their own. And yeah, it was, it must just be amazing for the people who were present to start seeing the world talk about this in a serious way.
So coming again full circle with yourself, Dan, where do you rate the documentary? Where does it sit for you?
Honestly, one of my favorites on the subject. I've spoken about another one called Witness of Another World that I love so much because, again, it's focused on the human story. The UFO event isn't, you know, it's just the impetus for the director going there to talk to the person about how it affected their lives. This was similar. Remembering that there's a human at the center of this story, that, and in this case, probably at least 100 people who experienced this, it makes you grapple with your worldview. And we're already kind of there because we do this podcast and we speak about this stuff often. But I have a feeling that a lot of my friends with children are going to watch this and kind of have a moment of being somber.
One thing to address afterwards, folks, I definitely echo that. I recommend people go and watch this. It's a fascinating account. If you're expecting something like James Fox's The Phenomenon with, you know, officials coming in and footage and videos and pictures of UFOs, and you're not going to get that. You're getting a human story, a human experience. We've talked before about Ryan Sprague's book, which very much documents the human experience of abductions and the after story and how, or even just any ET or non-human intelligence experience, that how it's affected them and the aftermath. And this is very much what this is. You get a fantastic retelling of the aerial school phenomenon event, but then what's happened after to some of those people and how they're coming to terms with it and its role in the overall scheme of things. It's fantastic. I recommend renting or buying. And on that, folks, if you want to do that, you go to www.aerialphenomenon.com. The links will be in the description for the show. They have had a couple of issues around the launch. As we discussed this and recalled, it's the 22nd of May. This was meant to launch on the 20th of May. They basically have come out, and to be fair, on social media, the Aerial Phenomenon accounts have been very, very active in discussing and keeping people up to date. It was meant to be on a streaming platform, and last minute, they were requested to make some changes they weren't happy with and decided to do it on their own. That then saw them come up with their own, you do the website, release it through there. It's not on Vimeo, it's not on any other streaming platforms and such. And it caused a few issues where people who had pre-ordered weren't able to get it straight away. But they seem to be clearing up those issues. I know as we record this, there are still some people a little bit unhappy with that. I would say, folks, on this occasion, it's not a huge company releasing this. They've put a lot of effort into it. They've been very open and very honest. I would say give them the break on this one because things changed relatively late for them. And for me, it's for the sake of a couple of days, I would hope that doesn't put you off renting or getting a copy of this from them because it deserves your money if that's what you're able to afford to keep up to date with the subject and really dive into a very well-made piece of documentary footage, documentary filming. Yeah, give them a break on this one. I can see some people not happy about it, but is that fair, Dan?
Yeah, I would agree. And if you're someone who isn't happy and someone who has the skills to maybe help, offer the help instead of complaining. That's what I would say. A little ironic considering what kind of the film talks about at the end, where they talk about why this stigma exists. And they say that human egoism entirely is at stake. Are we powerful? Are we even in charge of our own fate? In the past couple of hundred years, we've gone from learning that we're not the center of the universe. In the past hundred years, we've learned, thanks to Freud, that we're not even in charge of our own individual lives to a certain extent. We are victims of the systems that we're born into and the societies and cultures. And now we're hitting the point where we're realizing we're not the most intelligent or advanced creatures in the cosmos. It sounds to me like a kid growing up, and I feel like we should all stop throwing our toys out the pram if we want to say hi to the people that aren't from here.
some of your thoughts on the documentary. We reached out to find out what you had thought. Lynn says, I've just watched, I love that film, focused on the emotional impact on all involved. It made me feel sad that some kids felt they couldn't discuss it openly. I have total respect for Dr. John Mack for listening when many others didn't. James said, there's a lot of things they could have introduced, history, cover-ups, Men in Black, Roswell. I think it's stronger without that stuff. The film is strong for the things it hasn't put in. And I think that's what Dan, you and I were trying to get across here.
Yeah, the creators alluded to production company wanting to change the film in that way, to put some talking heads in and stuff as well. So just, you know, kudos to the creators for not, you know, taking the money there.
Sweet Peas. Sweet Peas Nana says, the best quote from one precocious little girl. It says precocious, it may have been precious, but either way, I don't think they have love in space. I've heard that theory that they, ETs, are envious of us and our ability to emote and enjoy and love. The comment surprised me. Sad how some were not believed.
I mean, space is a vacuum, right? If love is a physical, tangible thing, then the vacuum wouldn't have it. That could be a science-y thing. I don't know. We don't understand it, but we all know that words like love have a certain weight and power to them. So to say that they don't exist as things is strange.
As Hadaway once said, what is love? Baby, don't hurt me.
No more.
Great tune. The Paranormal Blip podcast, hello to them, said Aerial Phenomenon is the film we've been waiting for. It's a 5-star masterpiece, an outstanding documentary, easily the best UFO documentary and up there with the best documentaries I've seen. Look forward to the review, and Paranormal Blip podcast are releasing their own review soon, so thank you for that. Chris Fowler said, it's been 27 years since I saw the extended interviews when John Mack showed them here in Cardiff, Wales, back in 1995. The documentary, in my opinion, is the best on the subject matter, despite no videos of UFOs, etc. And that's fair. Like, a lot of the documentaries you do see with any footage, and again, this isn't bashing Stephen Greer, please, but a lot of those bigger, well-known documentaries from someone like Stephen Greer, the footage is just lights in the sky. And interspliced with known hoaxes or, you know, flares and stuff like that as well. So that stuff could have been put in there, but to what effect and what end? Because it's not part of this documentary or story. Karen says, I've just watched your beautiful and incredible film. It was not ours, but obviously Aerial Phenomenon. It was deeply, deeply moving and makes a huge contribution to the subject in telling the world so brilliantly the impact experiences like this have on those who see something that breaks our worldview. Thank you so very, very much. And the last couple, James Falk says, it was a moving and heartfelt film that captured the mystery of the phenomenon, as well as the lasting effect on experiencers. The best UFO doc ever in terms of emotional impact. All those kids were clearly stunned and telling the absolute truth as best they could. Bravo. And from Benny, said he thought it had excellent production values, the mundane, but in brackets, normal and relatable tone, balanced and told its own story rather than being pushed with voiceover or drama. I could see this was a human story rather than an alien one, and much better for it. Docs like this should be the norm. Filmmakers, take note. So I think that's a lot of insight into what people are saying about it. I've seen nothing negative at all in terms of reviews on social media, folks. I would be really honest, and Dan would as well, that the issues have been around the release and the technical hitches. But please don't let that put you off. Definitely check out the website. And if you can, part with a couple of dollars to review.
Yeah, definitely. It's an excellent film. It's well worth your time and attention. And it's definitely one that when people say to me, where should I start? I'll put this up as an example of, you know, if you want to just look at one crazy case that might just show you the world is changing, here you go, this documentary would be it.
Yeah, again, for me, you would say to them, not probably The Phenomenon by James Fox, but off the back of that, you'd be saying, you know what, that aerial document, the aerial phenomenon event, aerial school event, then there's a whole documentary just on that, and we're also about to have a whole documentary on a case from Virginia as well in Brazil, Moment of Contact, in the coming months. So it's not been a bad year for documentaries. There has been content, there's still more to come, and even Monsters in California, Dan, is one I'm really looking forward to from Tom DeLonge. The trailer did get me a little excited, so
yeah, it should be a lot of fun. And the movie that he made with William Eubank, Love, was excellent. It was a very surprising film, a little 2001-ish, but I'd recommend, if people haven't seen it, go watch it. It's better than you expect. It did win some awards.
I mean, Tom is very much a man-child stuck in the 2000s, so that's totally to be expected, isn't it? Like, given his band and the sound and everything like that. But that's not a bad thing. I was watching Jackass again the other day with my six-year-old, so...
Yeah, it really kind of captured that era, didn't it?
That time. Yeah, Tony Hawk's jorts and guitars, yeah.
Yeah.
But folks, like you say, this week coming up, interview with Brandon Fugel is out Monday, 23rd of May. That'll be on the YouTube channel on the Friday. Wednesday this week, we've got Dan's initial Colouring Outside the Lines finally dropping, around 5 months after we announced it, which is shorter than expected. Dan, do you want to mention a little bit about that, just so people know what to expect?
Yeah, for sure. It's cool to get it out on my birthday as well. It saves me remembering an extra date in terms of anniversaries. But I have a great conversation with Dr. Michelle Fournet. She's a marine ecologist studying the impact of sound on marine environments, as well as communication between marine animals. So basically, she's studying and decoding whale song. If you've seen the documentary Fathom, you'll know her from there and her work. I'd recommend having a listen. It starts talking about whale song, and then we kind of talk about communicating with other forms of life, and it gets a little philosophical. So I really hope that people enjoy that, and I'm glad to have it out.
And it'll be out on the That UFO Podcast feed. It'll be out on the That UFO Podcast YouTube channel, and you'll find it on the Anomalous Podcast Network feed. Apologies for the few weeks of silence on there, folks. It's been crazy hectic with me for work now for, 6 weeks, Dan?
Yeah.
And I do have a lot of content from Vinny, Priscilla, and, of course, Graham and Dave's most up-to-date unidentified aerial podcast just to put out. So within the next 24 hours, you'll see all that update as well. And then next week, later in the week, you'll have a breakdown, Dan. We'll cover the kind of fallout from the congressional hearings, and we'll cover some other stories within that as well. So awesome. Yeah. Lots to do, lots to come up. Folks, if you want to get in touch, again, remember, email ufouapam@gmail.com. And until next time, thank you very much for listening. As Dan's alarm goes off.
That was a phone call. I'm sorry that it went off there. Terrible timing.
You should have just said that was the end of the podcast alarm. That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rat. Meditated game of state full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. Then I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I called up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should seek therapy. And I don't know what it is because it doesn't really scare me.
The greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.